Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nonprofit View, a forum where nonprofit stakeholders can share lessons learned and discuss the latest developments in the industry. My name is Valerie Leonard, your host. I'm a consultant to nonprofits, and I specialize in community and organizational development. I work with nonprofit organizations to help them make a stronger impact to their clients and communities. You can find Nonprofit You on Facebook and Twitter, and I encourage you to comment early and often using the hashtags Nonprofit You or Starting a Nonprofit. You can also leave comments on blogtalkradio.com/nonprofit_you. You'll find a Nonprofit You fan page on Facebook, and the Twitter account is @NonprofitU. The chat room is open, and you can post comments and questions. In order to use the chat room, you must open a listener-only account, and you'll find a link to open the account on the episode page. You can also email me questions at consulting@valeriaflinnert.com or send messages through Facebook and Twitter. You'll find a Nonprofit You fan page on Facebook, and the Twitter account is @NonprofitU. We'll be taking questions by phone and from our chat room at about the 20-minute mark, depending on how this flows. And the call-in number is 347-884-8121. Again, that number is 347-884-8121. Today's episode is Starting and Managing a Tax-Exempt Organization. Again, we encourage you to call in with questions and participate in live chats at about the 20-minute mark. The call-in number is 347-884-8121. And nonprofit professionals and community stakeholders are especially encouraged to call in and share your story. Today, we're going to talk about starting, not only starting an organization, but managing an organization. And we've got a lot of ground to cover. We're going to be talking about a community needs assessment, selecting your leadership team, developing the bylaws, incorporating your organization, filing for tax exemption, nonprofit compliance, managing organizations, and then some of the lessons that I've learned along the way. So often we start an organization, but we don't really think about what we're doing, and that's not always a bad thing. Sometimes if you overanalyze, you never get any work done, but we look around us and we talk to people and we have a feeling that we quote-unquote know what needs to be done. So our immediate reaction is to go ahead and start an organization and solve the problem. Ideally, you should really do a community needs assessment before you even start an organization. You need to look at the community through the lens of the type of program you're thinking about developing. So, for example, if you see that housing is a serious issue in your community, when you look at your community, you want to focus on the housing issues. If you're in healthcare, if you want to do something community-based and it deals with healthcare, then you're going to be looking at your community through the lens of a healthcare organization. So you'll be looking at trends in health and wellness in your community. So whatever sector you're going to be involved in, you want to look at the trends, you want to look at news stories, you want to look at statistics, the issues as it relates to the particular sector. And when I say sector, I'm talking about things like housing, healthcare, economic development. And you want to look at organizations that are already providing the service, look at the quality of the service that they have, and then identify any gaps in service. And that's how you find out opportunities for yourself in your organization. And then you can determine whether or not your organization is even needed. So you're going to need to conduct your own research. And you can do that through surveys and questionnaires, through talking to people, statistical analysis, so looking at things like census statistics. If you're into education, you'll not only be looking at census statistics, but depending on what your focus in education, you might focus on school quality, school performance, parental involvement, those types of issues. And then you might consider doing interviews, which is speaking one-on-one to people. You might consider focus groups, which is basically group interview. And you want to take that information and really make sure that, you know, what you thought was true about the environment is really true. Sometimes, you know, we can be biased in our own opinions, and it always helps to look at the data and speak with other people to test your feelings. And then, given your research, you want to ask yourself again, is your organization necessary? Or it could be necessary, but is the service that you had in mind still necessary? If not, you know, after talking to people, doing the research, you might find you might want to do a different program, have a different approach. Think about what services will you provide and how can you differentiate yourself from the masses, and then look at the resources that you're going to need. And one of the most important things that you should do, even before starting the organization, is selecting the team. You know, all too often, we just want to start the organization, we do our articles of incorporation, and we just put some names down. So we get the people who are closest to us, you know, that's usually like a relative, a friend, coworker that we feel comfortable with. And we ask them, oh, you know, why don't you join the organization? You know, we just need your name, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that's one of the worst ways you can start an organization. You want to choose very wisely. So to remember, the success of your organization is only going to be possible if you have good quality people. So the higher quality of your leadership, the higher you can go. And when we talk about quality, we're not necessarily talking about people who are elitist, who have, you know, this unique skill set. We're looking at people who will be dedicated to the cause. You know, they'll be willing to share what it is, you know, share their knowledge, share their time, share their resources. So when we look at board members, we should know their responsibility. They're responsible for the strategic direction of the organization. They set policies, they set budgets, and if you have staff, it's their job to manage the executive director. They don't manage the other staff, but they do manage and evaluate the executive director. Now, two of the most important duties they have, these are their legal fiduciary responsibilities. They have a duty of loyalty, which suggests that their first loyalty is to the organization itself, and there should not be divided loyalty, meaning divided loyalty or conflicts of interest between themselves and another organization, between themselves and a family member, or whatever. So any situation that could potentially cause a conflict of that person, you know, having, you know, if there's any issue where he or she may have to choose sides, or if there's an issue where he or she gets some personal gain, you know, that should be avoided at all costs. Board members also have a duty of care. And what the duty of care tells us is that there should be no rubber stamps. You need to discuss vigorously, if necessary, any issue that comes before the board. You want to make sure you weigh the pros, weigh the cons, and after careful discussion, then you make a decision, and then you want to document that decision with the vote. And some of the things we really need to be concerned about, you know, making sure that there's diversity on the board. That could be diversity with respect to race, ethnicity, but most importantly, diversity with respect to skill sets. And that could be financial. You know, make sure you have someone who understands finance or accounting on your board so that this person can not only keep records, but, you know, if you're in a position where you're assessing opportunities, this person can help analyze the feasibility and break that down to the different board members. You ideally would want to have a lawyer because there's a lot of contracts, there's a lot of legalities involved with the nonprofit organization. You want someone who understands program development as well as marketing. But make sure that when you bring on people who understand program development and marketing, that there are no potential conflicts of interest between programs that they may be representing and the programs that you're asking them to come on the board to monitor, for lack of a better word. You want to choose people who are committed to the cause, and they're going to put in the time and donate and raise money. So you want to create an atmosphere there where there's give or get. You know, people don't have to be rich, but they have to be willing to share the resources that they have. And if they don't have financial resources, if they're willing to raise money, you know, ask people, friends and family, or develop fundraisers. And also you want to make sure that people do homework between meetings. So it's not enough to have a monthly meeting and nobody does any of the work that you talked about. And I can't say that you can't have any family members or people that have conflicts of interest. I'm just strongly suggesting that you don't. In those instances where there is a potential conflict of interest, you want to make sure that the conflict is disclosed and mitigated. So people who have conflicts of interest should not be voting on anything that's going to actually benefit them. But in an ideal sense, you don't want to have family members or people with conflicts of interest. And you can have family members. And the rule is you want to make sure that the family does not control the organization unless it's a family-run foundation. If it's a nonprofit organization, it's a clear red flag if the IRS looks at your application and sees that there's a majority of people on the board with family relationships and it's not a family foundation. So you want to make sure that you educate your board. When you bring people on, they should understand their roles and responsibilities. They should understand that they are to be wise stewards over the assets. They should also understand the legal liabilities associated with being on a board. They should also be educated about the compliance issues, and they should be educated and willing to participate in fundraising and the requirements for fundraising, and you know, them also some of the methods that have been proven to be effective in fundraising. And then they should also understand the issues and programs so that they can better help you to assess the programs, you know, look at what's working and what's not working. And another thing we want to look at is our bylaws. Bylaws are exactly what they say, bylaw. You know, they are created to govern the organization, and ideally, well, not ideally, they really must be consistent with the state code in which the organization is located. So when you do an application to the state, you know, requesting or actually registering the organization for fundraising, they're going to be looking at your bylaws and make sure that those bylaws are in compliance with the state. And basically the definition of bylaws is they're rules that govern the organization and the way that they conduct their business or make decisions. So you'll have things like, you know, who the officers are, what their duties are, what their terms are. And, you know, it'll also, you know, tell you, you know, when the meetings are, how people should be notified and all that good stuff. Now, before you start your organization, you need to get a tax exemption or a tax identification number, I'm sorry. You want to apply online, and you can go to irs.gov and you can apply for what they call an EIN, that's an employee identification number, or you can go and apply by telephone. There's a toll-free number, and the IRS is open Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m., and you can call 800-829-4933. Again, that number is 800-829-4933, and you can apply by telephone. Another method for application is through fax. You can complete the form SS4, so you can go on to irs.gov, look under forms, and the form is SS-4. That will help you apply for an EIN. And that number is 859-669-5760, and you can apply by fax. So you would just send the completed form by fax to 859-669-5760. So now we're at the point where we want to complete the articles of incorporation. So now that you understand that it is, you know, what it is you want to do, now that you know who you want to do it with whom, that would be your board members, right? And what you want to do, that would be your mission. It's time for you to complete the articles of incorporation. So you want to make sure that, you know, if you're in the state of Illinois, you use the nonprofit articles of incorporation form. And you can find that form on CyberDrive, Illinois CyberDrive. That is in Secretary of State Jesse White's office. And you want to go to Business Services, Department of Business Services, and you can download a nonprofit Articles of Incorporation form. The name that you use has to be distinct. That means no other name in the state of Illinois. And if you can't tell that it's a nonprofit from looking at the name, then you have to add NFP at the end. You want to select your registered agent, and your registered agent is the person responsible for receiving all notifications from, you know, the IRS, notifications from the state, and in the unlikely event that you're sued, any legal notices. So it's very important that you select someone who is responsive and responsible. And ideally, if you're going to have an executive director, this should be the executive director of the organization. It could also be the president of the board if you don't have any staff, or it could be the secretary. And some people have their registered agent as another organization or a law firm. But I strongly suggest that whoever it is not only is responsible, but, you know, they are accessible to people. So you want to be able to keep records in an accessible place. You want to list your board of directors. So initially when you do your articles of incorporation, they're not going to ask for officers. They just want to know who is incorporating. You want to include your purpose, and your purpose will be selected from a list of purposes provided by the state of Illinois. But you have to be careful if in the event you want to do a nonprofit, that list of purposes is not sufficient for tax-exempt status. And if you list it just as what the state of Illinois has and don't add the prescribed language that the IRS has, then your tax exemption will be kicked back to you. So it's conceivable that your articles of incorporation can be accepted by the state, but not accepted by the feds if you don't have that language. So it's highly recommended, if you know that you're going to be filing for tax exemption, to state your purpose in a manner that is acceptable by the state and the IRS. So, and then if you're also concerned about making sure your mission is followed, you want to make sure that you provide language that is from the IRS tax code, and you know they do have a sample on irs.gov, and then you also want to include your mission, and then you file that with the Secretary of State. The next thing you want to do is develop your budget. So you want to work with your team, so you're brainstorming with your board member and any crucial volunteers or potential staff members, and you want to identify issues that your organization wants to address. You look at the goals and objectives and some of the programs you'd like to provide, and then look at the resources that it would take. So you're looking at monetary resources as well as human resources, and just assigning a cost to all that stuff, and even if it's in kind. But you want to make sure that you can do your budget for 3 years. And the reason why you do your budget for 3 years is you, one, want to develop a good plan, but two, you want to be able to budget to the IRS over the 3 years. And you want to develop budgets for each of the 3 years, not just one budget for 3 years, if that makes sense. Next, you're ready for your first board meeting. And this is the meeting that's held immediately after you get a certified copy of your articles of incorporation from the Secretary of State. So during that meeting, you're going to actually acknowledge when you were incorporated by the state. And then you're also, you know, so obviously you're going to develop a meeting agenda, and then you send out a waiver of notice. And the reason why you send out the waiver of notice is because you have bylaws, and your bylaws indicate how much notice, right? But if you're having your first meeting and you don't really know when you're going to get get anything back from the state, so you may not necessarily have that first meeting scheduled. So you want to waive the initial notice. And that also protects you in the event that someone says, well, you know, this meeting isn't legal or the vote wasn't legal because we didn't get notice. And you do that waiver. So at your first meeting, you're going to elect officers. You're going to approve the bylaws and have them certified by the secretary. You're going to approve the first year budget. And like I said before, you're going to acknowledge when you were incorporated. You're going to select your bank and designate who has the authority to sign off on the account. And ideally, you want at least two signatories, perhaps three. I wouldn't go any more than three. And you want to write minutes and have them certified by the secretary. After that, you want to register with the Attorney General's office. So you're going to file Form C01 within a year of operating the organization. But I strongly recommend that you actually file that form immediately after getting your paperwork back from the Secretary of State, because chances are you're not going to remember a year from now, you know, that you should do it. And then if you forget, then you will have to pay $200 for a process that only costs $15. And what the registration with the Attorney General's office does is it puts Attorney General's office on notice that you are fundraising, and you will be letting them know what methods of fundraising that you're doing. So it will also provide very basic information about the organization, its board, and its finances. And I would recommend, too, that you get into compliance mode up front rather than waiting to hear back. So while you're going through this process of incorporation and registration, make sure you look at all the requirements for registration and reporting for the IRS, Secretary of State, the Attorney General's Office, the Department of Employment Security, and the Department of Revenue. And then you want to develop a calendar to let you know when you have to file reports for each of those organizations. So now you're ready to file for tax exemption. You can do a long form, 1023, or a short form for organizations with budgets less than $50,000. And the short form is better known as Form 1023-EZ. So these forms allow the IRS to determine whether or not the organization is doing work that is charitable. And then it'll also help them to understand the who, the what, the where, the why, the work that's being done, how much it's going to cost. And then they're also going to be looking for things like conflicts of interest, partisan, political involvement, and all that good stuff. So they word the questions in such a way that they can determine, you know, whether or not there's a potential for abuse. So once you get your letter of determination or your tax-exempt letter from the IRS, then you want to file for exemption from state sales taxes. Now, it's almost impossible to get an exemption from state sales taxes if you're an economic development organization. For whatever reason, you know, they frown on that. I'm not quite sure why, but it's very difficult. So if you're doing education, arts and culture, health and wellness, and all that good stuff, is much simpler. But what you'll need to know is, well, what you'll need to send are articles of incorporation, your bylaws, your letter of determination, a brief narrative that explains the purpose, functions, and activities of your organization, brochures or other printed material explaining the purposes, functions, and activities of your organization, and any other information that you feel describes the purpose, functions, and activities of your organization. So you want to give a complete picture so that the state can better understand what you're doing. And when I say state, at this point, we're talking about the Department of Revenue. So when it comes to managing the organization, you need to focus on developing an organizational structure that is going to help you facilitate decision-making, facilitate your program management, as well as the administration. And you want to keep that as simple as possible, given what it is that you said that you were going to do. You want to engage in ongoing board development and education so that they, you know, like I said before, your organization can only grow as high as the capabilities of the people leading it. And your board are your leaders, so you want to make sure that they are not only kept in the loop, but they understand best practices of how boards should operate, and that they understand, you know, how they can maximize opportunities for the organization. You want to engage in a process where you kind of look at the organization's strengths and weaknesses and other internal attributes that they have in order to do the program. You want to also look at those things in the environment that are out of your control. And given the organization capacity, which is, you know, an evaluation of your strengths and weaknesses and capabilities, and given what's going on in the environment, you want to position the organization in a way that they can take advantage of opportunities. You also want to develop your programs and develop your programs in a manner in which that they make maximum impact to the community. You want to develop a fundraising plan, which will look at, you know, your budget and how you're going to raise the money to complete, you know, to fulfill that budget. And you want to, you know, look at, you know, the revenues and when you might expect to get them. You want to engage in marketing and communication so that not only do your funders know who you are, where you are, what you do, and your impact, but you want to be able to do outreach to potential clients, potential partners, and just create an overall halo effect, if you would, for the organization. You want to manage your human resources, so making sure that you have policies and procedures in place for your human resources, but also make sure you engage in best practices for management. You want to make sure that you have financial systems in place. You want to make sure that you understand the legal ramifications for your programs. You want to manage your risk so that you can make sure that the program is running effectively. So when we look at risk management, we're looking at reducing liabilities, reducing financial liabilities. So you want to make sure that you have proper releases in place. You want to make sure that you have insurance in place and just do things to mitigate risk to the organization. If in the event there's a disruption in electricity and you lose all of your files, make sure you have plans in place to continue your business. You want to look at making sure that you're in compliance with your funders, making sure that you're in compliance with state and federal regulations. You want to have policies and procedures for your operations, and you want to train and manage your volunteers. So when I look at the lessons that I've learned as an executive director, this was a few years ago, I used to run an organization, I learned that you should focus on compliance first. Again, as I said before, because you don't have to file those reports before a year from the time that you're incorporated or receive your tax exemption, it's so easy not to focus on that stuff. You get so busy running your organization that you may forget when you should do the filing. So I strongly recommend, again, that you get a sense for what's required of your funders, what reports they need, when they need them, and what information you're going to need to fulfill those reports. You do the same thing for the state agencies, the federal agencies, and you set up a calendar so that when those dates are due, you're able to get them the information that they need on a timely basis. I have also learned that it's really important to develop strategic plans and programs that are community-driven and take into account, what the community says, what the client says, what your funders say, rather than develop your programs, in an ivory tower, in a vacuum, so to speak. Just because you build it does not mean that they will come. And then I've also learned that transparency and accountability can actually enhance program operations as well as the ability to attract volunteers and funding. All too often, we get in a competitive mode and we don't want to share information about our organizations. But sometimes sharing information about your financial performance, the impact that you've made, your evaluations, your 990s, making those public, that actually puts you in a stronger position. People are not saying that your stuff is perfect, but it helps, potential volunteers to understand. It helps potential people that you might potentially hire better understand, and it helps funders have a better understanding of what it is you do, what it is you do, how well you do it, your impact, and how much it costs. You want to maintain open and honest communications at all levels, especially in times like now. If you live in the state of Illinois, these are unprecedented times, given what's going on with our budget. A number of our organizations depend very heavily on state funding, and we don't have a budget. So many of those organizations are going with drastic budget cuts, from the state, not getting funding. Some of them haven't been paid in 6 months. Some of them are no longer in existence. And it behooves people who run organizations like that to maintain communication with other funders so that they understand what they're going through. And they may even be a great resource to help you, you know, get through it. And you should also know that being a nonprofit doesn't necessarily mean that you don't make money or can't be entrepreneurial and can't be innovative. You need to plan for program evaluation and performance management while you're doing program development itself. The worst thing that you can do is focus on developing a program, start implementing it, then you get the funder who wants to do an evaluation, and you haven't structured your program in such a way that you can get a meaningful evaluation. And then you should also understand that organizations go through growth phases, and different leaders and different strategies may emerge over time. You know, as you get more sophisticated, you know, you will probably have, you know, changes in leadership, or in the best case, you know, your leaders will actually grow with the organization. So I have completed my overview, and I'm just wondering if you have any questions. If you have questions, you can write your questions in the chat room, or you can call in. That number is 347-884-8121. Nonprofit professionals and community stakeholders are especially encouraged to call in and share your stories. Again, that number is area code 347-884-8121. Okay, it looks like we don't have any callers. I want to thank you so much for your time, and thank you for listening. I invite you to tune in next week when we will have Dr. Dennis Deer. He will be talking about domestic violence. And if you know of any social service agencies that might have an interest in domestic violence, please have them tune in. So until next week, take care.